edition of the Paul Harris Show. The penultimate Paul Harris Show. That's a lot of pee popping for one microphone. Thank you very much for listening. In this hour, every Friday, I do the Showbiz Show with Max Foisy, but Max is off today because his grandma died a few days ago, and he's spending time with the family. Hope to have him back for the final show next week, but in his stead today, I've invited Kevin Brackett back onto the show. Kevin is the man who edits and publishes the website Review STL and also one of the co-hosts of the Real Spoilers podcast, which I've appeared on a few times. Welcome back, Kevin.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me back.
Nice that you could stop by on your way to Comic-Con.
Yeah, it's a busy day, but I would not miss a chance to come talk with you.
Thank you. Now, this is the Wizard World Comic-Con that used to be held in the spring, and for some reason they decided, you know what, people don't have much to do on Super Bowl weekend. Let's have it then.
Yeah, so it's been here. This is, I think, its fourth time that it's been here, and we just had it, you know, not that long ago, and it's already coming back around. Mm-hmm. I think it has to do with that dome and sitting there waiting for people to utilize it, and so they're trying to get more people in, and probably just, you know, worked well with their schedule and their
But they could have had it in January for many, many years. The Rams weren't using the dome in January.
That's a Rams dig.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Josh. So who's the big attraction at this Comic-Con?
So it was going to be Stan Lee, and unfortunately, Stan Lee is sick. He's stable. He's doing well, but he's in the hospital just, you know, being monitored, making sure he's all right.
But this may seem inappropriate, but I'm going to say it anyway. Isn't it time to stop dragging Stan Lee all around the country just so fanboys can get his autograph? The man's in his 90s, for God's sake.
He's 95.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where he did cut back. I believe he stopped doing the San Diego Comic-Con. It may have been Kansas City Comic-Con. There are a few that he cut back from, and he was not originally scheduled to be a part of St. Louis Wizard World, and he was a last-minute addition only a couple of weeks ago, and so people were really excited about it. He was here, I believe, the first year and hasn't been back since, so this was going to be another chance to see the man, and unfortunately he's sick, obviously out of anyone else's control, but so we wish him well, and it's a shame, but I'm glad he's doing well.
Who else is going to be here that you're looking forward to standing in line to get the autograph of?
You know, it's I bounce around so much trying to cover all the different panels and everything, but Sean Bean. So we've got
I don't know who that is.
Sean Bean from Lord of the Rings, from the he notably dies in all the movies. That's
spoiler alert.
Oh, sorry. Not always, but he's known for that's kind
he
of the
was, he was a Bond villain.
Yep. Well, because he was in GoldenEye, so okay. He was the bad guy. Well, the spoiler alert again. Sorry, but that's what I do.
You don't have to do spoiler alerts for movies that are over a year old.
Okay, there we go. I'm used to it, though. You know, I live and breathe spoilers.
I know. So, you know, a show called Real Spoilers where you actually give away everything in the movie on your podcast.
We do, absolutely. So I don't usually think about holding my tongue on those things.
Oh, don't worry about it.
But there's a lot of Lord of the Rings people. So Sean Astin also, you know, Samwise from Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. And Rudy, obviously, tons of different films. But he's also in Stranger Things Season 2. So that's a very relevant one. But you also have people like Bonnie Wright, who I interviewed for the website Review STL. And she's from Harry Potter. She's one of only 13 or 14 people who have been in all 8 of the films. Mm. So she plays one of the younger Weasleys. And can I spoil it? Is Harry Potter off limits?
Sure.
No, Harry Potter. But she's a love interest of Harry. And so she's, but pretty impressive, though, that with the main cast, you know, not many people other than those main 3 characters stayed in the film for all 8. And she did. So she was a pleasure to speak with. And then have you ever heard of a movie called Rookie of the Year?
Rookie of the Year with a kid who has an arm. He gets Tommy John surgery and he's like 9 years old and he can throw the ball 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's one I grew up wearing out the VHS as I grew up. And the star of the film is Thomas Ian Nicholas. And he was also in American Pie. If you ever saw those movies, he played Kevin in American Pie.
Okay.
And so I was able to interview him as well for the site. And he has a ton of stuff going on. The guy is a musician. He has the Thomas Ian Nicholas band. He'll actually be playing on the entertainment stage. But he's also doing interviews and autographs and, you know, signings and all that stuff. So a wide array of people, whether it's, older movies, newer movies, television shows, really, it just everything pop culture is there.
Okay, so that's Wizard World Comic Con this weekend at America Center here in St. Louis. Now, when we turn our attention to movies, usually on this show, we review the new movies that are out this week. However, we can only go to them if the movie companies have screenings of them, and there were no screenings at all this week There weren't any last week either. And the only movie, new movie that we know of that's opening in the St. Louis area is called Winchester, which I'm fairly sure is not about the David Ogden Stiers character on MASH.
It is not, unless he was the creator of the Winchester rifle. There may be a,
I don't think he was.
But that's what the movie's about. So it's actually a horror film starring Helen Mirren, which
what?
Is... Yes, it's a horror film starring Helen Mirren. She is the widow of the creator of the Winchester rifle. And so this is based on a true story. I don't know what liberties they took. And obviously the story does revolve around ghosts and things of that nature.
Well, then it's not based on a true story.
Well, she was the widow of the Winchester guy.
It's based
right?
on a story that people told each other was true, but actually isn't.
That may be more of the truth there, but so some creepy things go on there. But it's another one of these horror films. One of the amazing things that horror has done in this new resurgence, and Blumhouse has been leading this, is the very low budget horror films that make a ton of money.
Yeah,
this movie has a $3.5 million budget. You have someone even with Helen Mirren.
Yeah, what's she doing in this?
She has to have points on it. That's the only way I would think. But $3.5 million budget, and it opened Thursday night 7 p.m. screenings, $700,000. So that means that it's on track for a nice weekend if it made that much Thursday. Mm-hmm. They're saying about $10 million opening weekend.
Wow. Speaking of box office stuff, which I know you're kind of obsessed with, somebody did the math on the Best Picture nominees for the Academy Awards this year, and they added up to find out how much have all nine nominees made. And the number comes out to $609 million at the domestic box office, which sounds like a lot of money, but when you split it up among nine movies, it's not much, and it is less than Star Wars The Last Jedi, which has made... Has it made double that?
Well, at the international box office, yes. So domestically, it has made $612 million. So it's a few million dollars more than all the Best Picture nominees.
Okay, now this brings up an interesting topic, which is when the Oscar nominees are announced, you never get blockbusters in there. You don't get comedies in there either. I was very upset that The Big Sick didn't get a nomination. It got one for Best Original Screenplay, but it didn't get one for Best Picture, even though it was my number one movie of 2017. You would think the Academy would pay attention to what I have chosen as the number one movie, but apparently I still have no weight there whatsoever. But here's the point. Wonder Woman, huge blockbuster, made more than Star Wars, didn't it, domestically? Maybe 800 million, something like that. I don't know exactly what the number was. Whatever it is, it was a huge box office winner last year, also not nominated. And so you end up with all these movies that made 10 million, 15 million, 25. You got a movie like Get Out. It kind of weights the average much higher because it's made nine figures. It's over $100 million on its own. What does that tell us about the Academy Awards, Kevin?
You know, it's really interesting. Over the years, the nominees have changed. It used to be when there was a movie, you know, back 50 years ago, if there was a movie that made a ton of money, it was because it was a great movie and you would see it being nominated for Academy Awards. But now the movies that are making all the money aren't necessarily what the critics are deeming the best movie. It's the blockbusters, the giant robots fighting each other. It's Star Wars. It's those type of films.
But even a few years ago, Lord of the Rings. One for Best Picture.
Well, and that was the outlier, though.
Titanic.
Sure.
Huge box office, Best Picture.
It's true. Well, it's just following the logic of it. Just because it makes the money doesn't mean it can't be on there. It's just generally the movies that the Academy is looking at are the art house films, the independent films, and sometimes those films end up going on to make a ton of money, just like Get Out. That was a huge surprise. Again, Blumhouse, we talked about that earlier. That company is amazing with its budgets. It keeps them low. I want to say Get Out had around a $5 million budget and broke $100 million domestic. Huge surprise.
But do you think the Academy members, the ones who are voting for this, are biased against the big winners? Or do you think maybe they're doing it because they want to help the small movies that they admired?
Oh, it's hard to say. I mean, to get inside the thing I always tell people is if you enjoy the Academy Awards, you enjoy the commentary, you enjoy the jokes, the whole show of it, seeing the celebrities, fine. But if your movie didn't make it, it doesn't mean it's a bad movie. It doesn't mean that it's not valid or isn't worth you watching. So I don't give 100% credence to the awards, as in, you know, don't worry if your movie's not on there. For the people that do win the awards, it does boost the box office, like you said, and it does look really good on a resume or on your IMDb page.
Yeah.
So it's not that they're worthless or anything. I enjoy the awards, but it's just that there's only so many spots for the nominees. And for instance, they bumped up the list. I think at one point, the Academy Awards in the olden days, there were 10 nominees and they narrowed it down to 5. And they recently, in the last few years, brought it back to 10 just mm-hmm. to fit in.
But they don't even get to 10. There are only 9 this year.
And they don't. And that's another bone of contention. I bet you had it with the Big Sick. Yeah. Why don't they use that? A few years back, the movie Drive, starring Ryan Gosling, loved that movie. It was, I think, the year they increased it to 10. If not the year after, but I think it was the year, and they put 9 nominees up there and didn't put Drive.
I didn't like Drive. I didn't think it deserved to be in there, but that's exactly the point, that these don't get in there. I read of some movies that did get a big boost. For instance, the movie Slumdog Millionaire, it made almost 2/3 of its box office after it was nominated for Best Picture. Ended up making $141 million.
Well, you know, a lot of these little pictures like that, though, there's not, you know, another direction they can go but up. A lot of these sit at $10 million, $20 million, whether they have the big stars in them or not. The subject matter may not appeal to as wide of an audience as something like Lord of the Rings that you mentioned, or like Titanic that had the star appeal to it and whatever else that magic, you know, formula was with that. But really, a lot of these pictures will sit in that $10-20 million range. They get nominated and boom, there they are. I know this year with another Best Picture nominee, 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, mm-hmm. that one has a nice hold at the box office. Lady Bird has a good amount coming in, and these are movies that have been out since December. Yeah. So, you know, really those little pictures with the 10 to 20 million, they sit there and they have a nice week to week. And then if they win, a lot of people say, I'm going to wait and watch the Oscars to decide what to go see or what to rent.
But also, when you don't have the big blockbusters, it kills the Oscar night ratings. And people always talk about, you know, they want to assign political blame for the ratings if anything goes down. You know, the NFL, the ratings are down because of the politics of this season. No, the ratings are down because they're on TV, and all TV ratings are down across the board. Fewer people are watching TV, and the same is going to be true of the Oscars. But in the case of the Oscars, I think it's the fact that there isn't a big blockbuster. The year Titanic won was one of the highest rated Oscar telecasts ever. Why? Because everybody had seen the movie, and half the world had seen it twice. Yeah. But that's not going to be the case this year.
Well, this year, the big nominee, so Titanic was up there with, I think, you know, 12, 13, 14 nominations. It was crazy how many categories it got nominated for. This year, it's the movie The Shape of Water.
Yes.
Did you see that film?
No.
Okay. So that film is a...
I don't go for interspecies love stories.
Except
for Splash.
Well,
that was it.
Then you've seen it. Okay. But no, that'll probably upset some people. People love the movie, but we did a podcast on it for Real Spoilers. And it was funny that the three of us on the show that day, we all saw it separately, didn't talk about it. And we all came to the studio thinking that we were going to be the lone wolf because this is such a critically acclaimed movie.
Yeah.
And all of us looked at each other like, what did we just watch? And then we all just kind of railed on it. The interspecies stuff was one of the reasons that we just couldn't get past. Beautiful looking movie, Guillermo del Toro, amazing director, but I don't think it deserves quite the acclaim it's getting. There are so many other films out. This was such a great year for movies. And, you know, like we mentioned some, The Big Sick, and there's some others that really, I think, deserve a spot. But the point is, it has 13 nominations.
Yeah.
The Shape of Water is not Titanic. It's not Lord of the Rings. That's not going to draw in the audiences.
It's not even Crash, another one that won but didn't deserve it.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of the Academy Awards, most people agree that Allison Janney, who has won a bunch of the other awards in the pre-Oscars season, is going to be a lock to win for Best Supporting Actress for playing Margot Robbie's mother, Margot Robbie playing Tanya Harding, in the movie I, Tanya. And I think that Laurie Metcalf from Lady Bird deserves it more, maybe as a career congratulations, whereas Allison Janney's won 152 awards. Laurie Metcalf has only won a few. But they were both terrific, and I liked them both as actresses. But I was one of those people who really disliked the movie I, Tonya. I didn't rave about it the way some people did. And that's because I lived through the whole story of Tonya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan 20-plus years ago. Even got to see them skate when I was doing a remote broadcast from Albertville, France, during the 1992 Olympics. I got to see them. This was before the incident in Detroit where Nancy Kerrigan got her knee whacked. And I was upset with some things that the movie blatantly changed and or didn't get right to begin with, that the movie kind of invented. Now, Christine Brennan, who's an old friend of mine who writes as a terrific sports columnist for USA Today, she's been going after the movie in her columns because she was there covering it as well. And this week I read a terrific piece by a sports writer for The Oregonian named J.E. Vader. Now, Tonya Harding is from Oregon. She was a kid there. She grew up there. She was the big story of Olympians from Oregon at the time that this guy was writing about her. And he went to the movie and he wrote a review of it that he calls "I Nauseated." And he goes into some of the things that the movie makers got wrong. He talks about two fictional scenes in the movie where Tonya confronts snooty judges. He says, yes, the audience loves them. They were crowd favorites in the screenings I attended, but they're completely unbelievable because they didn't happen in real life. He also says, the movie asserts that Tonya Harding and Jeff Galluli, her husband, knew nothing about the planned attack on Nancy Kerrigan other than it might involve some threatening letters, and the blame is actually put on hapless bodyguard Sean Eckhart, who in actual life is conveniently dead and can't talk about this. The fact of the matter is that Harding and Galluli were involved in the entire plot from the beginning. But the movie sets it up to make Tonya Harding a sympathetic character. Now, you saw the movie. Did you feel sorry for Tonya?
Well, so I was very young when all this happened, and so I remember it, but I didn't follow it, obviously, yeah, as closely as you did. I really enjoyed the movie. I thought it was funny. I thought Margot Robbie was incredible in the role.
Yep.
I thought Sebastian Stan will be at Wizard World Comic Con this weekend in St. Louis, actually. He plays her husband. I thought the performances were terrific. Allison Janney's always good. And I did feel like Tonya was in the movie getting a bum rap.
Yeah.
Like that's how they told the story, and I started to think, oh wow, people really talked bad about her, and that's not how it happened. But see, I don't remember all the facts.
Well, J.E. Vader writes, Harding has changed her story over and over in the past 24 years, but it's always that she is a victim and everyone else is horrible. She is habitually truth challenged. This fantasy film is Harding's dream come true, and that's my problem with it. Tonya Harding is a woman who had a life in which she made bad choices after bad choices. She's a woman who had asthma, who smoked 2 packs of cigarettes a day. This is not a woman who made good choices in her life. Look who she hung around with. Look who she married. Look at the thugs that she planned these things with. The movie also makes it look like, oh, she didn't really get any help from anybody, and the U.S. Olympic Committee was really mean to her. They sent her to 2 Olympic Games, which is rare for any athlete. She says she was judged unfairly in the movie, in her long program in Lillehammer. She actually moved up in the standings because they gave her generous marks. But you wouldn't know that if you saw the movie. J.E. Vader points out that she got tens of thousands of dollars for her training, not just from the U.S. Figure Skating Association, but also from George Steinbrenner, who was the owner of the Yankees, and from Phil Knight, who was the head of Nike. He also paid for her legal defense. But you watch the movie and you just think, oh, it's the whole system coming down and crashing down on her. And then there's this whole part towards the end where she's in court and you see Margot Robbie as Tonya Harding. She's crying because the judge has sentenced her for her role in the attack and gives her jail time. And no jail time. She gets no jail time. She gets probation. But he also tells her that she's banned from skating. And she gives this whole speech about how, oh, you can't take this away from me. The judge did not take that away from her. U.S. Figure Skating Association did that months later. The court was never involved in that. The court can't impose that sort of thing. That's not a legal sanction that a judge in robes in a courtroom could say, and you also can't skate anymore. That doesn't happen. That's the U.S. Figure Skating Association that said that she couldn't do that.
She wasn't at skate court.
She was not in skate court. No. By the way, she was just not allowed to skate in sanctioned events. She could go to non-sanctioned events, but then the other skaters aren't going to want to be around her because, after all, she was involved in putting together this plot to beat up one of her rivals. So, again, the movie is truth challenged. Tonya Harding in real life is truth challenged. And it irritates the hell out of me that this movie is rehabilitating the image of somebody who was just making bad choices and making evil decisions about other people. It's annoying.
Well, it definitely makes me think about the film differently. As a film, let's say, if I didn't know it was based on a true story, I think it's a well-put-together film, a well-acted film. But I always do like to know the facts, and I didn't realize those things. I need a little Paul Harris movie guide with me before I watch each film, or maybe like the old pop-up videos,
yeah.
You know, that every time that comes up, hey, this didn't really happen, or
well,
hey, this...
Well, you remember when I came on your Real Spoilers podcast because you were reviewing Molly's Game, and I came on because you guys know I play poker, and I had interviewed her, and I was able to tell you, okay, here's what the movie got wrong. Here's what actually happened in real life.
Well, you're Player X, right?
I was not Player X. Oh. Michael Cera was playing Tobey Maguire in that movie, not Paul Harris. But, you know, when you see these movies and they say based on a true story, you got to keep in mind that they are taking enormous artistic license.
Well, there's also inspired by a true story, which I think is even one rung down.
Yeah.
Inspired, meaning they looked at, oh, I like the way that person looks, or I heard they skated, and then they just go on, you know.
It drives me crazy, especially when it's based on real events that were reported by real reporters that were published in thousands and thousands of newspapers and other news organizations around the world. And then you make the movie and you go, eh, I know we live in a time where facts don't matter, so they don't matter in our movie either. That's a big problem for me.
Yeah, well, one of the biggest problems I've always had with films like that, when they revolve around subject matter like someone getting injured or even maybe killed, that movie that Mark Wahlberg did, Pain and Gain,
yeah,
directed by Michael Bay,
yeah,
that was based on a true story. Like, it actually happened, and it's a humorous movie. It's trying to be a black comedy, and, you know, I don't mind those darker comedic films, but when they're based on a real person that lost their life, I couldn't stomach it. I watched the movie and did not find any joy because they ruined someone's life.
Yeah,
I did not find it funny. So, you know, with the whole Nancy Kerrigan situation, it's hard for me to enjoy it as much knowing that, you know, this looks funny, these little situations they're getting into, but someone's career or life has changed drastically here. Yeah. So
there's nothing funny about that situation.
No.
And the movie makes it feel like it is funny and that she's sympathetic. And to me, that's just plain wrong. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more showbiz stuff. I've got a Netflix movie that came out in the last week to recommend to you. And there's lots more to talk about as we continue here on the Friday edition of the Paul Harris Show on the Big 550 KTRS. It's the Friday edition of the Paul Harris Show on the Big 550 KTRS. Thank you very much for listening. Stay in touch with me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter at Paul Harris Show. And check out my website, harrisonline.com. Kevin Brackett is in the studio with me today. His website is reviewstl.com. And he's part of the Real Spoilers podcast with Tom O'Keefe and a bunch of other guys. Every week they take one movie and review it until it's dead. They tell you everything about the movie. That's why it's called Real Spoilers. What are you going to do this week when there's no movie coming out that you've seen?
I think we're actually circling back to I, Tonya.
Are you?
Yeah.
I'll give you the article by J.E. Vader.
I'll be good. I won't be there. I'll be at the con all weekend, but I will forward it to Tom and let them discuss it.
I want to tell you about a new movie that is streaming on Netflix. Netflix produced this movie, and the movie is called A Futile and Stupid Gesture. Which, if you're old enough to remember the movie Animal House, or have ever seen it, you may remember that there's a scene towards the end where one of the characters says, you know, what this situation calls for is a really futile and stupid gesture. And we're just the guys to do it. That's Belushi. There's another guy who's in that scene who looks like an absolute geek and has exactly one line in the movie that goes like this.
Well, what the hell is supposed to do, you moron?
That guy is Doug Kenny, who was one of the guys who graduated from Harvard, having worked on the Harvard Lampoon, and said to one of his colleagues, Henry Beard, hey, you know what? We've had so much fun making fun of everything here at the Harvard Lampoon. Why don't we start our own humor magazine? We'll license the name from Harvard, and we'll call it the National Lampoon. and they got some backers together and found a guy by the name of Matty Simmons to be their publisher, and they started this magazine. And this movie, A Futile and Stupid Gesture, is essentially about the very bizarre life of Doug Kenny, who not only is responsible for having started the National Lampoon, he also wrote a great parody called the 1964 High School Yearbook Parody. A lot of this came out when I was in high school and college in the 70s, and that is the that was the target demo for the National Lampoon magazine, when teenagers actually subscribed to magazines in the pre-digital era. He also wrote a parody of Lord of the Rings called Board of the Rings. They also then created the National Lampoon radio show. They had a stage show in New York called National Lampoon's Lemmings, which had people like Bill Murray and John Belushi and Gilda Radner and Chevy Chase and Brian Doyle Murray and Harold Ramis, others of the people who were part of the generation that really contemporized comedy in this country. You got to remember that before that generation came around, comedy was still stuck kind of in the borscht belt, you know, the kind of stand-up comedians who would wear a tuxedo and go on the Ed Sullivan Show and did jokes about their wives and their jobs. Then came the generation that smoked weed and changed everything, the generation that created Saturday Night Live. Many of those people who Doug Kenny had hired to bring on board at the Lampoon for either the radio show or for Lemmings then went on to be the ones who were the first cast of and the first writers of Saturday Night Live, including people like Michael O'Donohue and Ann Beats and others. Ann Beats is played terrifically in this movie by Natasha Lyonne, and the movie shows you this guy's history, not only in working at the Lampoon and all those other projects, but then writing National Lampoon's Animal House with Harold Ramis and some other people, directed by John Landis. And then that was such a hit, he left the Lampoon and moved to Hollywood to be a screenwriter. And he came up with a tiny little movie you might have heard of called Caddyshack.
Heard of it.
Which he absolutely hated, the way it was done, but which he absolutely loved, and you see that. And then after that, he was having some personal problems and kind of having a breakdown. He went off on vacation by himself to Kauai, Hawaii, and he died at the age of 33 when he either fell or jumped off a cliff. Harold Ramis said, knowing him, Doug probably fell while he was looking for a place to jump. That's the kind of guy he was. In this movie, Will Forte plays Doug Kenny, and he gets him just right. Interestingly enough, Martin Mull also plays Doug Kenny. Martin Mull, who was also very popular during the 70s, with shows like Fernwood Tonight, and his stage persona, going out and doing his own comedy concerts. He's in this movie as the older Doug Kenny. But Doug Kenny died when he was 33.
I was just about to ask that. I'm doing the math, and even in my head, that doesn't add up.
Martin Mull is 74 now. So how is he playing the older Doug Kenny when there was no older Doug Kenny? In the movie, he actually looks at the camera and says, these actors don't exactly look like the people they're playing, but come on, do you think I look like Will Forte when I was 27? Come to think of it, do you think Will Forte is 27? The character he's playing, Doug Kenny, is, but Will obviously is not. So just go with it, and you do, and that way he kind of serves as a posthumous narrator to everything that's going on in there. Listen to who else is in this cast. You get Annette O'Toole, who plays Doug's mother. Matt Walsh, who you may know from TV's Veep. He plays Matty Simmons, the National Lampoon publisher. Ed Helms has a small role playing Tom Snyder. Seth Green plays Christopher Guest. Joel McHale is Chevy Chase. I mentioned Natasha Lyonne is Ann Beats. And you get others in there, names that you would not know, but they play Michael O'Donohue and Tony Hendra and Brian McConaughey and Gilda Radner and Bill Murray and John Belushi and Harold Ramis and P.J. O'Rourke and Chris Miller and Tim Matheson. And they have a guy named Lonnie Ross who looks exactly like Ivan Reitman, who came aboard and became part of the Lampoon world. And they also have a guy, very interesting, because they do a scene in the movie about the making of Caddyshack, a few scenes about it. They have a guy who's playing Rodney Dangerfield. Well, the only person I've ever heard who does a perfect imitation of Rodney Dangerfield is Brad Garrett, who was on Everybody Loves Raymond as the older brother, Bob or Robbie, whatever his name was.
I could see that with his voice. I could see him manipulating.
He does a perfect Dangerfield. He actually wrote jokes for Dangerfield, and he was interviewed a few years ago, and he said, yeah, when I wrote jokes for Rodney, I was doing Rodney's voice in my own head. And then it just started coming out of me as Rodney's voice. But he's not in the movie as Rodney Dangerfield. There's a guy named Irv Dahl, E-R-V-D-A-H-L. I looked this guy up. 11 years ago, he was on a reality show on TV to find the world's best celebrity impersonator. Oh. And he did Rodney Dangerfield. And I watched clips of that. This guy's better than Brad Garrett.
At wow.
It. He's almost as good as Rodney Dangerfield was at being Rodney Dangerfield.
I was going to say, better than Rodney Dangerfield,
almost.
Even.
He's perfect in this movie. So there were times when I heard Rodney Dangerfield's character talking, and I thought, wow, they got a clip of Rodney saying that. Oh, wait a second. There's no film or anything. Clips of Rodney actually saying that line backstage somewhere. It's that good. I will tell you that the movie is rude and crude, but that's what National Lampoon always was. These are the guys who, for one of their first episode, for one of their first issues, they put a picture on the front cover of the magazine of a cute little dog with a hand coming in from the side holding a gun, and the caption was, "If you don't buy this magazine, we'll shoot this dog."
Sure.
And now the poster for the movie is, "If you don't watch this movie, we'll shoot Will Forte."
Sounds like National Lampoon.
Yeah.
It's right in the spirit. I grew up with a lot of those movies that you mentioned, and then, of course, the vacation movies.
Yep.
I think that a movie, Loaded Weapon, that's just so stupid, but it's a parody.
See,
of
but by the
Weapon.
Time they got to Loaded Weapon and a lot of the other stuff that they've done over the last 15, 20 years, the original people from National Lampoon were all gone. They had all moved on to other things.
Sure.
And it was bought out by somebody else who didn't really care about the original Lampoon name, and they kind of degraded it. So if you're flicking around one night, late night on cable, and you go past one of those channels at 2 o'clock in the morning, and they're showing National Lampoon's Wet and Wild or whatever it was, right, that has nothing to do with the people who made Animal House.
No,
or Caddyshack.
They've gone pretty far away from what they originally did, but
yeah.
I would say people in my generation, Van Wilder is probably the one that everyone thinks about, and what really started Ryan Reynolds' career.
Yeah.
Before that, I don't remember ever seeing him, and obviously he's a superstar now, so I think that is kind of a cult classic for the younger generation.
Well, the movie is on Netflix now. It's called A Futile and Stupid Gesture. If you lived through that era and you knew anything about the National Lampoon, you probably don't know anything about Doug Kenny, but you should watch this movie because it's really interesting and really funny.
And you mentioned Joel McHale plays Chevy Chase.
Yes.
That has to be a wink at Community, where they obviously were on together. Does he even act or look anything like him? It's just a total...
He makes as much effort to look and act like Chevy Chase as Chevy Chase made to look and act like Gerald Ford.
Okay.
Which is none whatsoever.
Okay, so it's just a funny little wink and nod.
Right.
You knew he acted. Okay.
But it works in the context of this. A Futile and Stupid Gesture. It's now on Netflix. So take a break and come back with more of the Showbiz Show right after this on the Big 550 KTRS. You're wondering why all the Eagles music on today's show? It's because Josh is running the board and he's an Eagles fan, and that's who he's rooting for in the Super Bowl on Sunday.
I'm rooting against the Patriots, not for the Eagles.
But you haven't put together a Robert De Niro, Bradley Cooper betting trifecta like in Silver Linings Playbook, where if the Eagles lose, you'll be totally depressed for a week and blame Jennifer Lawrence.
I wonder if Eagles fans who are big football guys are like, oh, I'll watch this movie, what they would think of the dance competition at the very end. Is that going to throw them off?
Yeah, I think it will a little bit. Kevin Brackett is here filling in for Max on the Showbiz Show today. I know you are a huge comic book movie guy, and I know that there's this comic book movie that is already breaking records now for pre-sale. It's called Black Panther. Comes out in, what, 2 weeks?
Yeah.
What do you know about it? What's the story?
Well, so the character, Black Panther, made an appearance in Captain America: Civil War, which was like an Avengers light where it had so many different characters. And it is going to be a huge film. The buzz around it, ever since that movie, people were clamoring for a standalone Black Panther movie. And here it comes. It's getting great critical reviews. It just had the premiere, I think, last week. People are raving about it. They went to Twitter instantly and said that this is an amazing film. And it's selling a ton of tickets.
Will this be the first superhero movie with a majority black cast?
I would think that it probably will be with a majority cast,
not counting Wayans members.
Right. No, I almost stopped there for a second because it actually, there are a lot of major publications out there, a handful of them saying this is the first black superhero movie and they're not including Wesley Snipes and Blade, which was pre X-Men. Hmm. So it was a very early Marvel comic book movie. And, you know, that it was crazy when articles were coming out saying this is the first. So yes, with the majority cast, yes, but we can't forget that movie that made a really good amount of money and kickstarted. That was a Marvel property. A lot of people don't realize Blade is a Marvel comic book character.
Why hasn't that character come back?
That's a good question.
I'm sure Wesley Snipes asks every day. I'm still available, guys. I'm out of jail. I still have to pay taxes.
I don't think it's because of Wesley Snipes. I think it's because of maybe Blade 3, which wasn't very good. I think they kind of ran it into the ground. And that's one that actually had Ryan Reynolds in it, and they added the humor element and everything. But not as good as the Blade 1 and Blade 2. I think Blade 2 was actually directed by Guillermo del Toro, which was just kind of an interesting...
The guy from The Shape of Water.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, so Black Panther is going to be huge. It's getting all the good press, and the people that saw it at the screening, the critics who have given it early reviews, everyone is giving it great praise.
During the Super Bowl, we will see a lot of commercials for movies that are coming out, many of which will not be coming out until much later on this year. But I'll mention a few, and you tell me if you know anything about them. One of them, of course, is Solo, a Star Wars story, which is one of these stand-apart Star Wars movies that's not in the linear timeline of Last Jedi, etc.
Star Wars? I think I've heard of it.
Yeah.
Is that... so these are... It started off with Rogue One. Disney, when they bought Lucasfilm, they spent a few billion dollars on it, and they decided, well, we're going to start putting out not just a film every couple of years that's in the Star Wars, you know, episodes 1 through 9. We're going to start doing these spinoffs. And Rogue One was really successful. It had really good critical reviews, and the fans loved it. And that was actually a prequel to episode 4. So it's hard to follow if you're not a Star Wars fan. But these movies bounce all over the place. And so this will be the second standalone. And it was actually going to be directed by Miller and Lord, who were famous for the Lego movie. They directed that and created that. They produced the 21 Jump Street stuff and worked on that. And apparently the Solo set was turning into too much improv. It was getting a little too off script. And so they brought in Ron Howard, who is a great director. So apparently the movie is changing a lot from what the Miller and Lord version was. So I think that's one of the reasons why it's taken so long to get some kind of a trailer or to get press materials out about this movie, is because they've kind of changed what the movie is, and they're probably trying to still decide and finalize, is this the product that we want to promote for this final version?
Well, the movie comes out this summer. Are they still making the movie?
Yeah, I think they may still be doing some post-production, though, because they had a majority of the film, or I think 50%. There was a lot of it filmed with Miller and Lord, and they brought on Ron Howard, and apparently...
He replaced everybody with Christopher Plummer.
That's exactly right.
Han Solo is now played by Christopher Plummer.
I think Kevin Spacey was supposed to... I think he auditioned for Han Solo.
Get out of here.
He did. I think he did. So, there were a lot of people. Burt Reynolds auditioned for Han Solo. And back in the day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm not kidding. So anyway, the thing is that they had filmed a majority of the movie when they brought on Ron Howard. And at first, the rumors were, there's going to be some reshoots. And apparently, from what I hear, I don't have it directly from Kathleen Kennedy, but I heard that there's a majority of the film that had to be reshot. So,
wow.
It's coming down to the wire. It's, I think, 4 months away, and we still haven't seen a trailer.
I'm just imagining it being the mid to late 1970s and Burt Reynolds having to audition for something. He was the number one box office star in the world at the time.
Yeah.
And did they actually do a screen test with him? Have you ever seen video of that?
No, I don't think so. I don't think there's actually any video of that.
Here's what happened. They called him up and they said, we're just having you in this movie. And he said, $50 million. And they said, okay, we'll get Harrison Ford.
Yeah, that was probably...
Because Harrison Ford was pretty much an unknown at the point.
Yeah.
He had been in American Graffiti, and that was about it, right?
Well, I think he had been in the first Indiana Jones, I want to say.
No, not before Star Wars.
Was that right after Star Wars then?
Indiana Jones, I think, was the 80s.
early 80s then. It was, they were right close to one another. I know that
Star Wars was 77.
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah, so they were right close. I couldn't remember which one was first, but yeah, but yeah, he was definitely an unknown talent at that time.
Yep.
But yeah, a lot of people auditioned for the role, but Lucas back in 77 making this little independent feature. It was his first major film, if you call it that. He had done the THX film,
THX 1138.
Yeah, and that was it. So,
and American Graffiti.
Oh, that was Lucas too. That's right. I always forget that was him. So they didn't give him a huge budget for Star Wars, and they definitely couldn't hire people like that. So, but well,
there will be ads on Sunday for that, and also for Dwayne Johnson's next movie, which comes out this summer, called Skyscraper, and the next Jurassic World movie called Fallen Kingdom. And Amazon will have an ad for Jack Ryan, which is coming to that service soon. Netflix might do an ad for their Cloverfield sequel, God's Particle, and there'll also be a big one for Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible Fallout, which is not going to be out until the end of July, but they'll have the promo for it in the Super Bowl on Sunday. And that's all the time we have for the showbiz stuff this week. Kevin Brackett is on the Real Spoilers podcast, which you can download for free, and he's also on the website reviewstl.com. And thank you so much for coming in and filling in for Max today.
Thanks, Paul. Always fun.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.